Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and today you're going to hear from myself and from fellow infants Matt and Jake, as well as infant friends Lindsay Hansen Park from the Year of Polygamy podcast and Paige Smathers from the Nutrition Matters podcast. Now, today the five of us are having a conversation about what it means to be a man. Now, this was recorded shortly after the recent Vegas mass shooting incident, but a few days before the Harvey Weinstein sexual assault story went public and all of the subsequent Me Too responses from women who have also been sexually abused by men. Now, the conversation was inspired by an online article that I came across that asks the question, why do men keep doing these horrible things? Now, again, the article was more focused towards these mass shootings than on sexual abuse, but the same question could be asked for both of these issues. Why do men keep doing these horrible things? What's the problem or the problems, and how are we going to fix them? Now, none of us on this podcast are experts. We don't have the answers. We don't really even understand the full extent of the problem. So I hope that nothing in our conversation will sound like we're trying to make excuses for anyone or that we're providing justification for horrific acts of violence. But to quote a line from Mindhunter, which is this amazing new show on Netflix,
how do we get ahead of crazy if we don't know how crazy thinks?
So today's discussion is an attempt for us to better understand things that are really painful to even talk about or try to understand. And more specifically, for this episode, to understand what it should mean to be a man. And I want to start with this video that I found on YouTube that asked this very question to dozens of young boys, teenage boys, men. What does it mean to be a man?
Be a man. It took me a while to learn what that meant.
Act tough?
Be a man?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that.
Unafraid.
Courage.
Strong. Like if somebody dares them to do something and they won't do it, they say be a man.
Awesome.
Insult.
Older.
People have said be a man to me, and because I was kind of being a wuss and they were basically telling me to buck up.
I feel like it's kind of sexist when someone just says be a man. Well, there's strong women as well.
Strong.
Stupid. It's almost a sexist phrase too, like if you're not being a man, it's kind of saying you're being a woman in a way, too.
Take responsibility.
Insulting. Focused. Because to be a man, you need to be focused and strong and have a good understanding of the world around you so you can be a better person.
Misleading. I've learned that being a man doesn't mean to shut out your feelings, it's to embrace them.
Toughen up.
Bullshit. What does that even mean? That's such a vague term, be a man. You know what? Classically, men have beat the shit out of women. That's what men have done. And so that's not the man I want to be.
There's no real definition of what that is to be a man. But there's an assumption when someone says it like that, that there is a very clear definition of what men should be. Strength, conviction.
Responsibility.
Overrated.
Well, who defines what a man is? I mean, we all have to walk our own paths. What I consider to make me a man may not be what makes you a man.
Okay, I'll stop doing that. I'm gonna lose Matt. I don't wanna lose Matt.
I'm feeling shame. I'm feeling
lonely. Isolation.
Lonely. And I feel isolation. Like I haven't had a play outlet.
So oh, what see, I'm but saying I am
I'm,
playing.
I'm starting to feel violent, Glenn. That's what I'm right. saying now.
This is okay, Matt's foreshadowing here. Hey, did you guys all read the article that we're gonna be smacking down?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Lindsay hasn't read it yet.
All right. Yes, I have. I have read it.
Okay.
Are we going to be reading from it?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be doing it SmackDown style and then see how it goes.
Glenn, look what shirt I'm wearing.
Nice. Look at that.
I know. It's like my cool. favorite comfy Infants, shirt.
And do you have more than one?
No.
Oh, we can fix that.
Okay.
We can fix that.
I think one is plenty.
Hey, wait a minute.
Just joking.
Do you have one, Lindsay? You don't have an Infants on Throne shirt, do you, Lindsay? What is that all about?
I only have a, what do you call it, a stein?
Oh, yeah.
See, I feel like that's more useful.
I like those. Yeah, I use that a lot more than I wear the shirts. Well, I wear the shirts a lot, too. But, yeah.
Dick, where are you?
In my sex dungeon. just kidding. I'm just kidding. I don't have sex. I am in my basement, though. It's an unfinished, obviously. So this is like my little murder palace.
Oh, not your microphone. Yeah. Okay. Sorry,
it's where I build the bombs.
Right.
Do you have any way, Lindsay, to turn up the volume on your mic? It's really low. Is it the gain? The gain's like super low or something. Or maybe it's just that microphone. It's been like that before when we've recorded.
Hold on, I can work on it.
Okay.
Is that better?
Yes.
I think that was an improvement.
I just don't want you to get feedback from this microphone.
See, but I live on feedback. If I don't get feedback, I'd have no idea where I'm going or what direction or how people are responding to. I need feedback. I do this all for feedback. Jake's kind of smiling.
Okay. I'm a dad, so I get that joke.
You get the dad humor now.
I'm one of you.
I've been a dad for too long. I don't know that there's anything other than it.
You're right.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with some introductions since we've got Paige and Lindsay that are not normally on Infants on Thrones, but have been before. Paige, would you introduce yourself so that people who don't know you, like Jake, know you, can come to know you?
Okay. Yeah. I'm Paige Smathers and I live in Salt Lake and I'm a dietitian.
And you have a podcast called
Nutrition Matters Podcast. And, we just explore different topics within nutrition. And then I'm a mom of two little girls, ages 3 and 5. So that's me.
Cool.
And we've got two, episodes with Paige that nobody's heard, but they've been fantastic. Believe me.
Oh, so
believe
so,
me, they've been great. They've been great. The greatest podcast of all podcasts. They're great. Believe me.
Oh, I see where you were going with that. I see where you're doing that. So are you saying, Matt, that you've already kind of surrendered to the idea that this episode will go out before any of the other nutrition episodes? I mean, that's what it sounds like. You're kind of just accepting that.
Well, I didn't really think through it that much, but I guess, if pressed, I guess that is what I'm saying.
Maybe, okay.
When is this one going out?
I don't know. I'll race you for it.
Okay. Like loser wins or what? Because
there's no winners and losers. We're all just losers.
In life, we're all losers we're all going to die.
That's right. That's right. Yep. And Lindsay, what's going on in your world right now? We haven't talked in a while. How are you doing?
I am fine. I am going down to Colorado City this weekend for our annual service project. So going to be camping out in Lyle Jeff's house, which is my fun, weird brag.
See, we've talked about doing that, like inviting infants at some point. I just haven't given you dates to do it, but this weekend.
Yep, you guys suck. So, so I'm doing that.
Wait, you would actually let us on there? I feel like if anybody's equipped to handle that difficult landscape of overlapping theologies.
You know what?
It's us.
Crisis, right? Is a town, is Short Creek, and like people down there are ex-Mormoning super hard. Like you go down on a Thursday night, it's bonfires in every backyard and rap music like cranked up, and
they're drinking tea and it's not even herbal.
No, I'm serious, the guy's like,
no, herbal's the name of the guy who's
armband tattoos, long hair, meth. It's
whoa. I draw him the line at meth.
Yeah.
You had me at the long hair and tattoos, but
right.
No, I don't like my men that smoke meth.
There is actually a drug problem right now in the town, just because
I'm sure.
Just like everything else, like you know how we Mormon and then they like really Mormon, same thing with their faith crisis. So an interesting place.
Cool.
Well, and meth is a kind of a human condition right now, so that's unfortunate.
That is.
And then you were in Vegas this last weekend for that Rise Festival.
Yeah.
What was that like?
My friend is the creator of the Rise Festival. It's like a giant lantern festival in the desert. It was really great, actually. I didn't know what to expect, and spiritual things kind of creep me out now.
Really?
This was really great. Like,
you're still friends with Michael Ferguson, and he's going to be starting the Spiritual Brain podcast. So he creeps you out with the spiritual.
Michael never creeps me out.
Okay.
Michael and I like held hands and just like snuggled the whole time. It was wonderful. No, it's just, there's something about 2 hours of beautiful lanterns going up in the sky and everybody is happy. It's kind of great, especially right after the shooting. So
Lindsay, do you feel like Ginger and Marianne, we have to pick a favorite, Seth or Michael?
You know what? That's an excellent question, and I'm going to use some diplomacy here and say that I'm not going to answer that.
Oh, see, I was trying to ask the hard questions.
It's like asking who your favorite child is, and this is why we have polygamy in heaven, so we don't have to make these decisions.
That's why.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but
oh, so I mean, that's,
how
so
many?
That's
well, so let me.
That's why you guys?
So remind me, Lindsay, do you have kids?
I do. I have 3 children.
You do have 3. Okay. I have 3 kids. So, I mean, we all have a favorite. Come on. Let's see.
Out of all my children, Seth and Michael are my favorite.
That's funny. Controversy here on Infants and Thrones averted by the ever diplomatic Lindsay.
Yeah. That's why we bring her on to help us figure out how to be diplomatic.
Michael did kiss me like for a photo and wanted to post it on Facebook, and I was like, that might be too much.
Yeah.
Because he already posted a photo and like it looks like he's proposing to me. It's my profile picture right now. He wasn't proposing to me. If he did, I would have said yes, obviously, but
duh.
We're really confusing Seth's friends right now. Seth's friends don't understand what is happening. Why Seth's husband is like smooching girls and proposing to them.
Like, so it's more than just you.
Yeah. Oh no, it's a threesome. I'm into poly relationships. I don't know if you know that about me, but it.
I don't know. I've heard a lot of stuff.
But only with beautiful gay men.
Okay.
You and John Hamer have something in common. You're both interested in beautiful gay men. That's what I meant. His aesthetic. He has a very particular aesthetic.
Right.
Hey,
in the name of Jesus Christ, gay men.
Gay men.
You know, it's kind of like...
So
John's aesthetic like, is like Elven Prince from Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like that's...
All right. So tonight... I came across this article. You know, Lindsay mentioned the shooting in Las Vegas and the Rise Festival. That's why that festival was there, because of this horrible tragedy that happened in Las Vegas last week. And I came across this article that's called Thoughts on Vegas and Why Men Keep Doing This by Charlie Hone, who is an author of a book called Play It Away. And there were some things in here that I found really interesting. One, you know, Jake, we've been talking, I don't know, a couple of years that you've been interested in doing some episode on like masculinity or the roles of, is that right? Am I saying it right?
Yeah. So last Sunstone, I mean, I've been thinking about it for a long time, but it crystallized a little bit. There was a presentation, not Sunstone of 2017,
of 2016. There was a presentation that I sat in about Mexican saints and Mormon masculinity. And I don't remember who the presenter was.
It was probably Ali Siles.
I'm going to say, yes. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would trust Lindsay on that. Yeah.
I defer to her. Well, actually I think, So it was, and it made me think of, as I was sitting in that presentation, a few thoughts kind of germinated a little bit. And then in February, when there was the Sunstone Southwest in Arizona, Matt and I, we talked the night afterward, we were hanging out at your house and just kind of hanging out. And we were talking about this, where there's a very different type of Mormon masculinity that allows for more, a different type of man and heuristics of masculinity that are very different than mainstream American macho-ness. And I don't want to get into it too much, because I think it'll come out as is that your recollection?
Yeah.
Of that position, Matt?
Yeah, yeah. And we were talking about like the way Mormon men specifically express intimacy with other men, and how it, both with in family relationships as well as outside of family relationships, was my memory as well. Does that?
Yeah, yeah. So it's like we talked about priesthood blessings as like a safe space where you can express vulnerability and touch another man in a way that's like intimate. But not shrouded in homophobia, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. It's as non-gay as you can get while touching and expressing emotions to a man, right?
Right. You can touch another guy and say, I love you, and it's like nobody cares.
Because your hands are on their head, which is right. Nobody's got head fetish.
Right.
Mormon feminists talk about this too. Like, the only time that it's really acceptable for men to cry in Mormonism is at the pulpit.
Oh, interesting.
That's seen as a sign of power and not weakness. But like, if you're crying like on the baseball field, you're a pansy.
Right.
So
that was it.
So I noticed that there was this theme in the article that we're going to be smacking down, and I thought, oh, let's read this, because I think we'll be able to talk about a lot of different things, because this is something that, you know, Jake's been thinking about for a long time, and we've had conversations about. There's other things in here about like connection and disconnection and things that are going on in society and like mental health, which I don't know, Paige, do you do much with mental health, or is what you do is mainly nutrition, or is there a connection between mental health and nutrition that will come out in this as well?
Well, yeah. So it's kind of like a Venn diagram. That's how I describe it. So like my world would be one circle, and, you know, a therapist would be another, but we overlap quite a bit.
Yeah.
So while I'm not a trained mental health therapist, I have to be, you know, aware of the various things that come up in session, that I kind of have to be able to navigate that without, you know, freaking out and running the other way. So it's something I'm really comfortable with and deal with a bunch, but definitely not like, you know, exactly trained in that.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. And we're all here just because we have an interest in having a conversation, not because anybody's really an expert on anything that we're going to be talking about tonight.
We like Paige, and she's a good contributor. We're not saying she's here because she's the expert.
We're not trying to get you in trouble, Paige.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not do that.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So let's start reading and have a conversation about this. So it's Thoughts on Vegas and Why Men Keep Doing This. And I'll go ahead and start. So the author says, I'll never forget April 20th, 1999. I was 12 years old, sitting in art class in middle school. We were playing with clay and making sculptures. Suddenly, our principal came on over the PA. Her voice trembled. I have an important announcement to make. All teachers and students need to hear this. I will wait 60 seconds for everyone to be completely silent. The next minute was eerie. My friends and I exchanged confused looks and nervously laughed. Our teacher held her fingers to her lips, or finger to her lips, silence. The principal's voice came back on the PA. There is a shooting at Columbine High School. All students are to go home immediately. Columbine was 15 minutes away from us. I remember taking the bus home and walking into my house. My mom turned on the news. I recognized that fence. We've driven by that fence. My mom knew that teacher, Dave Sanders. She'd substituted with him at Columbine. So he starts off talking about Columbine. Do you guys remember when this happened?
Oh, God. Columbine? Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, my wife was a teacher for, well, up until last year, for almost 20 years. So, yeah, I mean, it was...
It's hard to believe it was, what, 18 years ago?
I remember
99.
The shooter, like, had singled out some kid who was African American, and I remember hearing that on the news, and that, like, made me so sad, because one of my best friends with that was African American, and so, like, that was, like, one of my first exposures to, like, overt
tragedy.
Racism. I mean, I'm from the Bay Area of California, so I didn't even know that, like, that kind of thing existed. I think that was just really naive, and yeah, that was so sad. It was so hard.
You know, we have Kathy Carlston, who is with Affirmation right now. And I think, yeah, just Affirmation. She was one of the students that survived the shooting.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So she comes to Sunstone. She's spoken about it, but she was there and very affected by it.
Wow. I mean, I had nightmares about it when I heard about it. Like, I would have nightmares about it for like a year afterward. And I was and I went back and like read just like Wikipedia articles about it. And I mean, it was a terrible tragedy, but it was even like the way they planned it was even worse. Yeah. Like, they had a couple bombs in the cafeteria that didn't go off. But if they had gone off, it would have been like, well, extremely devastating, even more so.
You know, each of these tragic and affecting events that, it all happened in very public places that we all are touched with. So whether it be a school, a movie theater, a concert, a race, I mean, these places that we all have connections with, and it causes us to contemplate and reflect on how you behave, when you go places that you go all the time, and your kids go all the time. So it forces you everyone internalizes this, and not to make it about me, but when I thought, no, we all navigate and change, I think, the way we at least think about these spaces when these things happen. And that was what was so prominent at Columbine for us, as kids were in two or three different schools at the time, and considering just their safety and how people are responding, and let's get guns in the classrooms, and let's love, you know, all this it's a very that event is crystallized as any.
Yeah. I think it's also one of the first, I don't know about first, but one of the early things that started moving my political sensibilities to the left, because of Bowling for Columbine, which, you know, Moore documentary that came out after it happened. And I still remember my reaction to that, you know, like the things that I just couldn't accept about Michael Moore, because he was a liberal, but there were some things that I accepted, and I started like moving a little bit more towards that. But yeah, Columbine was, I still remember that as this huge tragedy. And now it seems like there's these kinds of shootings that happen, I don't know, on a regular basis. I heard one statistic when people were talking about it, that 9 out of every 10 days, there's some kind of a mass shooting that happens in the U.S. It's so common now that it doesn't always make the news unless it's like some big thing that happened in Vegas. But do you know anything? Is that a legit statistic?
I was going to ask you, because I was thinking the same thing. Like, the Trolley Square shooting was by, you know, in Utah, by our house. The cop that was off duty was in our ward.
When did that happen?
That was, gosh, like 5 years ago, I think.
Oh, jeez. That was
not even on my radar.
I remember it when you say that now. Yeah.
And the shooter worked at my husband's work. He was a there. And so, like, it's so weird to be so closely connected to it.
Yeah.
But that's what I was going to ask you guys, like, in terms of prevalence. I think just about everybody has some sort of connection now to a shooting in America. Mm-hmm. Insane that is the case.
Yeah.
All right. Who wants to take the next section?
All right. So if we're to believe the businessinsider.com, as of August 26th, the U.S. has had 247 mass shootings.
I'm a little confused. That does not look like the next paragraph to me.
No, no.
Oh, sorry. I was trying to get Glenn's little statistics. Sorry.
About 9 out of 10 days.
I'm so sorry.
I'm totally reading. I'm so sorry. And I'm looking. Oh, yeah. The punchline was 247 mass shootings in the 238 days of 2015. So,
but that's, yeah. I mean, one caveat to that, but the way that that's defined is like according to the FBI's definition of a mass shooting. And I think that's something where it's like four or more when four or more people, which is obviously still a tragedy, but like unrelated. I don't remember exactly how it's defined, but
right. And that statistic that I heard, the 9 out of every 10 days, that was on MSNBC. It was on the Rachel Maddow show, I think. So I trust it. That it was vetted pretty well, but so it sounds like what you read, Matt, it was like 247 shootings in 238 days.
Yeah,
in 2015?
This was isolated to until August 26th of 2015. Yeah.
Oh, okay, so up to that point in the year, there had been more shootings than there had been days that year. Wow.
Yeah. And yeah. All right. Let's go on.
All right. But Jake, way to keep Matt.
Honest. Thanks, man.
I mean, you need to keep doing. You know Matt well enough to know.
Yeah,
like don't try and read something else and make it seem like it's what we're all looking at. Come on, I appreciate that.
All right. Well, the definitions define statistics, so it's important to know those. But yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So who's going to take?
I'll
go, Jake.
You know exactly where we are, so start reading this.
In the last 18 years, we Americans have experienced too many of these shootings, and I want to share a few of my thoughts on why I think they keep happening. By the way, this isn't a political post about guns in the media. It's a post about men and their emotional health. Over the past few years, I've found myself in the mental health space. I've learned a lot, particularly that men in the United States really struggle in this realm and have very little social or emotional support. This affects men of every race and socioeconomic background. I was watching Jimmy Kimmel's Impact. If anybody wants to interrupt, I don't know.
I've got a question here.
Okay.
Because I want to avoid, and I'm trying to remember what it's called. Not all men. Is that what it was? Like the not all men.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think there's a danger in taking this kind of approach and things that he's going to go on to say about men. Is there anything we need to worry about that as we're framing this going into it?
Well, when I talk about feminist theory, it gets hard because it's like, you know, when you talk about the church to your believing family member and they think that you're criticizing the church means you're criticizing them. Kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
What we're talking about here are theories, and theories are ways to explain systems. And so that's a helpful sort of boundary for me, that we're not talking about, like, if you're sitting in the chair and you're like, that doesn't resonate with me, great, then we're not talking about you. So my whole, you know, theme, my mantra is, you know, attack systems, not people. And I think that that's what this is trying to do. They're talking about statistically, generally speaking, and this is a theory, which is only, it doesn't mean it's a universal truth. It means it's a tool to help us understand something.
Well done, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, but here, this in this context, as well as in most violent contexts, and certainly the cases in sex abuse, offenses, and particularly molestation, I always speak in terms of the dude, the guy, the man, because that's a fair generalization, even though, yes, women can be offenders as too. So, yeah, it still holds. Not all men is what we're saying.
Well, I looked this up before we jumped on because I was curious, with all of these mass shootings, are they always perpetrated by men? And I found a 2015 article that talked about how rare it is that a woman's actually involved. There was one that they referenced that happened in California, and it was only notable because of the there were two gunmen and one of them was a woman, and how rare it is for a woman to be involved in something like this. Anyway.
But again, if you haven't, have anyone out there listening, have you been a mass shooter? If not, then you're okay. Like we're not talking you.
But I think that also is important. I mean, I also think that it's important for people that, you know, I'm probably not in danger of being a mass shooter, but I am. I do probably have these gaps in my in you know, male to male peer intimacy that are outlined in this article. So we're not accusing every man of being a mass shooter, but I think that he does make some fair points about like male vulnerability and the fact that it's not there. There's no avenue to express it. And that builds up hostile impulses.
Yeah. But, and then ultimately the article isn't just about mass shooters or even violence necessarily, but mental health, particularly amongst males. So I think it is relevant certainly to, I don't know, keep.
So is this a smack up or a smack down?
Probably
time will tell. It's a smack. Okay. And then the content of what we say will dictate whether we're promoting it or otherwise.
Gotcha. I just want to say this, like, about sort of defensiveness. It would be nice if everybody listening did what you guys just did. And when you hear it, you go, oh, well, let me look at it and see how it does apply to me instead of getting defensive. But I think that these conversations, particularly with our political climate, are so fraught that defensiveness is natural. I found myself getting so defensive over the last year over things that probably I don't need to be defensive about. And so defensiveness to me, when I feel that, I'm like, oh, well, why do I care so much? Like, why is this affecting me? And usually it's because there's something in myself that I have to unpack. So anyway, I guess I'm just saying, I appreciate that you guys are willing to look at it and be like, this actually can apply to me.
All right, go ahead and continue, Brother Yake.
Okay, got it. I was watching Jimmy Kimmel's impassioned raw speech last night about the Vegas shootings. Like Jimmy, I felt sick and heartbroken by the tragedy, but something he said stood out to me.
We wonder why, even though there's probably no way to ever know why a human being would do something like this to other human beings who are at a concert, having fun and listening to music.
Sadly, researchers know a lot about why human beings, particularly men, do things like this.
All right.
I think why mass shootings keep happening. It's tempting to say the mass shooter's motive was simply pure evil or to blame the media or guns, but that absolves us of looking deeply at what each of us as individuals, family members, friends, and community members might be missing. Now, I'm not a psychiatrist, and I don't know much about the Vegas shooter. I'm just a guy who studies mental health. Again, this is not a political post about guns, for the same reason it's not a political post about weaponized cars. Strange choice of words. Easy access to guns is a part of the problem, but I'm not as interested in the tool as I am in what causes a man to use it so destructively. Nor is this a post in defense of the shooter or to make him sound like a victim in any way. What he did was a horrific act. He is a murderer, and he is not excused from this by any stretch. So I truly feel sympathy for the shooter's brother, who seemed to be totally caught off guard by this behavior and now has to deal with the aftermath for the rest of his life. The goal of this post is simply to shine a light on what's eroding men's emotional health.
All right. Any comments on that?
Yeah, well, this is also not a political podcast, and so if people want to start commenting about the efficacy of gun control or the importance of gun control, it's not my intent to even broach that topic here. So go take your triggered self somewhere else and go complain to other people and spin your shit in other Facebook places, not here, because that's not the point of this. Fair.
You tell right. him. You tell him, Matt. You knock that straw man to the ground.
No, it's coming, man. The fucking they're gonna see the damn description, and somebody's gonna comment, and that's what's wrong. That's what's wrong with the world. Is that right there? We can't even start the conversation. See how I'm projecting.
So you're preemptively right. shaming
yeah,
somebody
I am.
Who would do that.
No, here's what I'm doing.
History person. You're a piece of garbage.
Let me be a little self-aware and identify what I'm actually doing is I'm actually getting angry and experiencing trauma for something that I just expect to happen that just may not. And there's no point in that. So I'm going to go back to oming and being in the moment and just what I've said, how we mean, we're not having a conversation about gun control. That's not the point of the podcast. So I'll just echo what
Homeboy said. Are you feeling like disgruntled rage, like in your belly, like maybe the urge to retaliate? Should we be concerned?
Yeah.
I'm like nodding. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm constantly, that's the thing about me is me like the Hulk have the same secret. We're always angry.
Jake, go give him a hug and rub his back. Quick.
Do you need to play?
Yeah, I need to play. No. Anyway.
Okay. All right. So now that we've preempted all of those comments,
Matt, why don't you turn that passion into this next section?
Okay, I'll do that.
The number one reason that this guy is postulating.
Okay. So do we get the number one goal is to shine a light on men's health? Great magazine. Number one. It was anything but hear the voice that says it. We're all basically alone. Men in the United States are chronically lonely. Chronically. Boys in the United States, just like all human beings, need touch, caring, warmth, empathy, and close relationships. Okay, so is that an offensive way term to use boy? Because I watched the Blossom video. Mayim Bialik about.
He means young men, right? He just means young.
Why'd you cover your head, your face there, Lindsay? Come on. Because I called her Blossom. Don't know
about the future. Yeah, no, I think that's really great that you are doing your work, Matt.
No, so
I think she's. I mean, if they're talking about boys, they're talking about boys. The problem is a power dynamic when you talk about women.
Lindsay, I know. I get the. I adopt the principle. I know what. I was fucking around. Sorry.
Allow yourself to be femsplained, Matt.
No, I know.
Do it. Sit there and take it.
Awesome. Huh?
By your actual given name, but
what's that?
I was just offended you called her Blossom, but that's an argument for another time.
Oh no!
This is the actress who played Blossom, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Name, Matt. What?
First of all, I got her name eventually without prompting.
What was it? I forget too. So
Mayim Bialik.
Yeah, it's not worth saying. Just call her Blossom.
Thank you. So, and I just went chronologically through how I know her, which is Blossom, and then I learned her name, but no. Anyway.
She's the one that's on the Big Bang Theory, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she got like a PhD in neuropsychology, neuroscience or something
like that. Yeah.
And she's hot. I'm sorry.
Dad humor.
Yeah. But what I did read something about how her character as Blossom dresses the exact same as her character in Big Bang Theory, and she went from being trendy and hip to nerdy. I don't know what that says.
What's the difference between Blossom and Punky Brewster? Maybe the world
is blind. Oh, okay.
Let's not go down that path. Never mind.
Okay, no, I could do an hour on the difference between Punky Brewster and Blossoms.
Really?
So, oh yeah.
Like okay. Sunstone 2018.
Turns out my most of my media was really that of tween girls. So between She's the Man, Sydney White, Aquamarine, 10 Things I Hate About You, dude. This is like my jam.
Remember the one where they got locked in the freezer and they died, like a kid died on She's the Man. Anyway, it was a good one.
She's the Man. That's a movie. That's a movie with
Punky Brewster. It was Punky Brewster.
Yeah, that one I remember.
That was.
It was a special Punky Brewster. They had some. Yeah. They had some dark.
Good lessons. Good
back
good
then. Yeah. Lessons. That's like the Dudley Gordon Jump episode of Different Strokes.
Stop it.
Oh, you guys were looking at this, huh? There's nothing wrong with being naked. You can just have an awful lot of fun with your clothes off.
What kind of fun?
Well, for instance, a skinny dipping. I think I got some pictures around here of a bunch of us skinny dipping. You guys are going to love them. Let's see if I can find them.
Stop it.
Oh, that's horrible. dude, I can still remember the pit in my stomach during that episode. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Back to mass shootings. We'll get away from child death and molestation. Men in the United States are chronically lonely. Boys in the United States, just like all human beings, need touch, caring, warmth, empathy, and close relationships. But as we grow up, most of us lose those essential components of our humanity. So is that true? As you guys have grown up, and so I got two
before
questions
you ask if it's true, he fleshes that out a little bit more. Fleshes it out, not flushes. He fleshes it out a little bit more.
All right.
Well, why don't we do that before we
start talking?
Yeah.
What's worse, we have no idea how to ask for those things or admit we need them because we're afraid it will make us look weak. As a man, you might be thinking, not me. I've got drinking buddies. I play poker with the guys. I've got friends. He does flesh that out a little more. Good catch, Glenn. But do you have confidants? Do you have male friends who you can actually be vulnerable with? Do you have friends whom you can confide in, be 100% yourself around, that you can hug without saying no homo? That was good.
I'm glad you're laughing at this because earlier when we were talking, you started doing these things when we were doing like the priesthood blessing stuff, and you're like, you can touch him without being gay or that. You're kind of doing what he's talking about here.
Well, no, because I know it's a concept.
Right.
You were
foreshadowing and illustrating.
Yeah, he says it. Yeah, he says it really well. That's absolutely without feeling tense or uncomfortable while you're doing it. For many men, the answer is no. So we spend our time posturing instead. From an early age, we have an unhealthy ideal of masculinity that we try to live up to. Part of that ideal tells us that real men do everything on their own. Real men don't cry. Real men express anger through violence.
All right, now let's stop here and ask if it's true.
Byproduct is isolation.
No. Oh, dude, you just ruined it. You just ruined it. I'm teasing.
What's fiction mean to you, Glenn?
What does fiction mean to me? Jake, what is fiction? I told Matt about our fiction discussion.
Apparently, I don't know because apparently gravity's fiction. Apparently, the theory of relativity is fiction. Apparently, the theory of evolution is fiction.
Yeah, thanks for derailing us, Matt.
This is going to be
okay. So, but let's back up here because one thing that I think that I really have, I feel a little apprehensive about like my son going forward is that in Mormonism, I felt like in the young men's program, I had an opportunity to foster relationships with like in your teens with a bunch of males that you wouldn't necessarily associate with otherwise that forced you to be empathetic toward people that you wouldn't necessarily need to be, that you wouldn't necessarily be empathetic toward otherwise. And that kind of forced association was really helpful for me. And I also felt like my experience and my mission, the one thing that I'm most, that I feel like I came away with most from my mission is a way to build like bonds with other young men. And like build male relationships in a way that like I didn't necessarily have the tools to do before I went on my mission.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So you're giving props to the Mormon Church for allowing you to foster good relationships with other kids, other boys when you were a boy.
I think so because it strips away like because you have this like ultra chaste like lifestyle that you're all trying to live, all of these other heuristics of traditional masculinity are kind of taken away from you. Like the daredevil element of it isn't as strong. I mean, there are like kind of physical stunts that you can do, but it's not like, hey, go crush this beer, you know, and you know, who fingered their girlfriend this weekend or some shit like that. You know, like there, all of those things are kind of stripped away because of the lifestyle that you're leading. And so you have to connect in other ways that I think are more conducive toward vulnerability.
Did you say that about like scout camp? I mean, I worked at scout camp for 4 years as a camp counselor and I saw stuff there that is ridiculous, like behavior, dangerous behavior. It's almost like men are going to act out these scripts that they have been given in society one way or another. And I saw a lot of that at scout camp. I saw a lot of like naked mountain wrestling. I don't even know.
Naked mountain wrestling. Wow. Uh-huh.
You went to a very different scout camp than I did.
Well, you guys know about the naked mountain climbing merit badge. Yeah, right.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
In front of your leaders. Like they were skinny dipping and then they would like push each other down a mountain and
oh yeah. Well yeah, that's not really mountain wrestling. That's just like skinny dipping and pushing people down a mountain.
Okay, total difference
term. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. SGAPPDM. Spadum.
No top.
I feel like I disclose that. Like I have all sisters. I have two little girls. I work with like mostly women. So like men to me are like. Almost a bit of a mystery, you know? So I feel like,
oh, wow.
I don't have much to say. I'm like, I mean, I do have a few men that will walk through my doors. But it's always a very different conversation. And sometimes when I try to kind of go into like, okay, why are you here? Why are you struggling with food? What's this about? Tell me about growing up. Tell me about whatever body image. It's like, no, we're not going there. We're not talking about these things. I just tell me like carbs, fats, and protein, you know? So, I'm kind of listening and kind of holding.
So
back.
you're kind of interested to see if this explains some of the differences that you see with men clients to female clients.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have some hunches, but I don't know if I have like tons to offer because I'm like surrounded by women like in my life. I mean, obviously.
What she's saying is you never had to be a camera person during a blue dart contest. Like I did.
Yeah. That was.
So you hang in some bad, bad circles.
Were these like brothers or something?
I had a brother and I did like in my neighborhood, in our ward, there were 26 of us my age and only 7 of us were girls and the rest were dudes. And so that's what we did. Like,
so girls don't do blue darts?
No.
Come on.
Why not? It's a magical trick. Yeah.
It's the miracle of the human body. And talk about it's a miracle.
Have you ever done a blue dart, Matt?
Of course.
You have?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. No, I never did. Jake?
Yeah. Your next live video. There you go.
Yeah, right.
Dude, I compliment
Googling blue dart right now.
Oh, dude, no, on YouTube. Right. You should YouTube it.
All right. You're gonna need the video. Listeners, everybody, right? We'll take a 30-second break. All of our listeners, everybody go.
Hashtag infants on blue darts.
Yeah. So Mike, I can explain it this way.
Sign up to Patreon.
At a Thanksgiving, many years ago, my younger brother performed a blue dart right in front of my dad and drove my dad out of that. He like, I'm out of here. I cannot abide any son of mine pulling down his pants, putting a lit match and creating flame just from the human body. Yeah. My sister and brother and I were laughing, but my dad could not abide it.
Like perform the blue dart like it's some art.
Yeah,
you guys got to.
So that's. I mean,
and,
I
he, think, and they called him the aristocrat.
Yeah. Well, I think that the way that Matt Glenn and I are approaching the blue dart issue is. I mean, so Lindsay, do you see the skinny dipping, pushing down mountains? Is that a manifestation of a lesser form of male camaraderie than what I was describing? Because to me, that's like, yeah, I mean, I'd love to have some friends I could push down a mountain right now. Naked. I'd love to have some friends that I get naked with and push down mountains. That would be awesome.
I mean, I would say that like the interactions that I experienced growing up were very gendered though. Like when I hung out with boys, I knew what they did. And when I hung out with girls, I knew what they did. And they were different. And part of it could be like just us performing, you know, our social scripts or whatever. But I guess I'm not saying you're wrong, but I would be interested in seeing how much Mormonism mirrors sort of the masculinity scripts for boys, because I grew up in Utah. I have family from rural areas, and so they're encouraging everyone to go hunting and to man up and do all those things. So
man up.
Looking right. as a girl looking at boys, like they had to be tough.
Yeah.
You know,
I saw a poster once for a big truck with like massive mud flaps and big tires. And there was a single word, batitude. And that like forever entered my lexicon as like this like male ideal of doing blue darts and getting naked and pushing each other off the mountain and like real men don't eat quiche. You know, that is batitude epitomized. Is that what you're talking about?
Whoa. Yeah.
I mean, we have to admit, and of course now I run with Mormon fundamentalists, which are rural communities, but there is a culture in Mormonism, I think, in the Intermountain West that like, remember, Mormons settled the West. So Western culture is largely influenced by Mormonism or vice versa. So like this idea of like driving down the road with your jacked up truck. And what are those like testicles that people hang from their trucks?
Testicles.
I don't think that many people.
They're like,
no, in Utah, they do. That they do. They're everywhere here.
Yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah, that's
it. Thank you, Paige. And you know what else we have? We have car eyelashes, but that's a whole different.
Okay, but do you think that people are dry? How many car testicles do you see in the church parking lot on Sunday?
Okay,
that's how many truck testicle?
That people leave their truck testicles at home and they drive their Buick. I don't know.
that's what I'm saying. It's like you don't see them in that. Like the Mormon manifestation of that masculinity gets really redirected.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Well, I want to validate what you're saying, Jake. I think what you're saying is really insightful because I had a foot in both worlds of the Uber, you know, football, high school football, that whole kind of scene, and then the Mormon scene. And it was definitely, the Mormon scene was certainly less aggressive, less, it was safer. It was I think it was more intimate even than, what you said rings very true to me, Jake.
Well, go ahead.
Spiritual power is the masculine currency of, because like the Mormon church runs on male spiritual power. And if you're a man in the church and you've never cried and no one's ever seen you cry, even at the pulpit, like there's a level of like spirituality that you don't achieve. And in turn, I think like Mormon masculine cred that you don't achieve if nobody ever sees you cry from the pulpit. If nothing brings you to tears, even Jesus Christ, the atonement, you know, he's on the cross, he's fucking bloody and shit. Oh my God. Like that, if that doesn't bring you to tears
for you,
you're not a,
not a real man.
Right. Henry B. Eyring is the manliest man in the
world. Although he's kind of that's kind of a newer thing amongst the apostles, right? He kind of brought that in, the constant weepiness.
Yeah, it is kind of his trademark.
I figured out what it is that I think I was taking issue with. So, okay, I think you're right about sort of the masculine scripts are different. They're less crass or crude in Mormonism. And I'm going to ask this as a question because I didn't grow up as a boy, and it sounds like your experiences are different, but are you saying that you did feel at church like you could be more vulnerable and honest? Because like the men that I deal with in the post-Mormon world seems to be like they couldn't really talk about things like sex, like real issues with sex, real issues with masturbation. So I guess it was the vulnerability part that.
Sure. I mean, that's certainly what, I mean, we weren't there talking about masturbation or, you know, it was certainly the script of the church of chastity and that, but I have seen and observed where that same toxic masculinity, aggression, kind of crudeness creeps in more. And I think that's the leaders very much dictate that. And I happen to have really good leaders, and then I was a young men's leader, so I tried real hard to avoid. Basically, you can't let the jocks run things, because if you got too many jocks in a young men's, and they try to alpha it, and they try to make it just like high school, and so see, not all jocks hashtag, but there was still vulnerability. I mean, we talked about real things. We talked about, you know, concerns and life issues amongst leaders and amongst these guys when we had, we even in lessons kind of got, there was intimacy. We're talking from that perspective, I guess. Certainly it was lacking, not, the topics you're talking about weren't there, but yeah.
I think your question though, Lindsay, about the vulnerability and inability to share things, I think it brings us back to what the claim is in this article, you know, because the author of this article says, you might be thinking to yourself as you're listening to me say this, well, not me. I've got drinking buddies. I play poker with the guys. I've got friends. To me, that's equivalent to what we were saying is, oh, I do the blue darts. I do some mountain naked wrestling, you know, things like that. I've got friends that I do. But then he follows up with the question, but do you have confidence that you can actually be vulnerable with and confide in 100%? And is that relationship that you have with your, you know, as a man with your male friends, is there still this kind of batitude machismo mask that you have to wear in front of them? Even in Mormonism, I guess that's the question that I would extend then, because I think what he's saying here is that there's this mask that you have to wear. You always have to appear strong. Otherwise you're going to be thought of as weak, and strong has certain things that are associated with it. Do you see that still in the Mormon culture as well? I mean, like they probably draw the lines in different places, but I'd say it's probably still there.
I would just say that I think that Jake, you've actually kind of changed my mind on this. Not that I had taking a stance, but I think you're right. I think maybe Mormonism does allow men to confide in each other in ways that you wouldn't get in mainstream society. Mm-hmm. It's not complete, obviously, mm-hmm. but it does sound like that you all found, like, you could sit and you could share things that you couldn't share with your parents.
But here's something I see too, though, is sometimes like I'm involved with, so my husband's dad is a stake president. And when he wants to say something to the family, or when he wants to express like a vulnerable emotion, it's through prayer, mm-hmm. or it's through kind of like bearing testimony, or it's up on the stand, right? It's never, at least in my experience, it's never just in like a casual one-on-one, let's really sit down and talk. It's like, yeah. I need to get my spiritual hat on in order to connect with you, you know? So it's almost like, oh, when I talk about these subjects, I have to do it in this tone or in this way, because that's where I feel comfortable, because it's so uncomfortable and so vulnerable otherwise.
There's also these kind of unwritten rules about what you're allowed to share and what you're not allowed to share, where you can't really talk about failures and sins in any kind of way that would glorify, you know, or like risk glorifying them. So a lot of times I think there is still this posturing, you know, like, yes, there are some cultural ways that you can express that vulnerability, but if you do it outside of that, I think you called it a hat, you know, that they put that hat on. But if you try and do those same things without that hat on, it's going to be weird, or
like you're,
you
know, naked.
Yeah. On a mountainside.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. And I think that's why I would be interested to do like a text analysis. Maybe I can figure out a way to do this, but it would be interesting to see like the prevalence of references to individual, like kind of father blessings as it overlays with like trends in mainstream American masculinity and the way that it's perceived, because fathers can say things to their having left the church, now that I don't think that anybody is speaking for God, when a father gives a father's blessing, when they say God loves you very much and he's so proud of you, what he's saying is, I love you,
right?
I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
And but the thing is, like Paige was saying, that's the avenue that they use. Like they're putting on these masks and they're using like the structure of the church to kind of redirect this vulnerability. But I think to kind of your point, Lindsay, also is that it's not really, it allows for expression of a certain type of intimacy that maybe there's no avenue for it really in mainstream.
Well, I think American, it's like a cushion.
Masculinity. Yeah, exactly.
It protects them from really showing who they actually are, you know, yeah. Like it's like this like barrier that's like, this is safe to kind of hide behind here.
Right. God loves you. God is so proud of you.
Honestly, kind of sad.
Yeah.
Dad would just say that to his son, you know?
No, and I do remember at one point, I was already mostly out of the church at this point, and my dad asked if he could give me a blessing. And I'm like, okay, you can give me a blessing. And I regret this now, but I resented the fact that he would be more intimate and vulnerable with me in this ritualistic custom of putting his hands on my head and we both got our eyes closed and we're not facing each other, you know, but he's able to say these things that he's really worried about me in my life and things that he wants to bless me and, you know, protect me against. But he wouldn't say those kinds of things just in a normal conversation, looking at me face to face, you know, eye to eye, you know, so I probably shouldn't. I wasn't appreciating that there was at least in Mormon culture this way for men to connect with each other that it, at least if we take this author at face value, he's saying we don't really have that in mainstream male culture. But I still didn't appreciate it, you know, for what it was. I kind of resented that we had to have those forms. But so do you guys agree? And let's get back to the article here. Do you agree with his claim that this is something, you know, that men in the United States are chronically lonely and they don't have these relationships that the forms of masculinity kind of keep men from being vulnerable with each other?
I mean, I'll say something about that. I just read a book that I would recommend everyone reading. It's called Real Boys, Rescuing Our Sons from the Myth of Boyhood. And I've been, you know, part of Mormon feminist discourse for a decade now. And I've seen all sort of waves and trends in how these issues are discussed. And honestly, I think that the country is coming to a point where we can no longer ignore what is happening to men. I think, you know, in all social movements, sometimes we have to overcorrect in our discourse to get the attention of things. And so feminism, especially second wave feminism, largely wanted to, you know, do things without men, leave men out of the picture, criticize men. And while that was an important part of the process for women to unpack sort of where they stand in society, I also think that what we are seeing now is that men are affected by these scripts too. And we have to contend with it. Now, that's not a very popular idea in feminism because we think like, oh, we spend so much energy organizing around men anyway. Like, why do we have to take care of their problems? But this is a problem. I mean, I go down in Short Creek, which is Mormonism on speed. You know, it's amplified.
I thought it was meth.
Not meth. Depends on the household.
Right.
And it's really amplified. And we talk a lot about in polygamy, we talk a lot about the women, the poor women victims. And in my experience, women who leave the group fare a lot better and bounce back quicker than the men. The men are experiencing a huge crisis and they're kind of empty in ways that are really, really tragic. And I don't think we can ignore it. So that's a long answer to say that I think that this is not just a problem. I think it's a crisis. And you don't have to, it's not like you pick feminism or you pick men. I think that feminist theory encompasses all of this. So that's how I approach it.
Interesting. This ends part one of our Be a Man conversation. Now, you probably heard that we were doing this over video. And if you're interested in watching the video version of this discussion, you can find it over on our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/infants. And speaking of Patreon, we're going to try something a little different to encourage more of you to join, hopefully. For the final 3 months of 2017, we will be selecting a patron of the month. Yay! Like, I remember when I was in elementary school and they would do student of the week, and I got to wear a vest and they'd give me a free pencil and I got to choose my own ice cream at the end of the day. That was pretty awesome. And say my name over the announcements. Oh boy, that was cool. So we're going to do something like that with Patron of the Month for Infants on Thrones. And here's how that's going to go. Now, right now, we have a little over 200 Patreon supporters. And of course, we want that to grow. So on the last day of each month, starting with October 31st, we'll put all of our Patreon supporters' names on an Excel spreadsheet. And then we're going to run a random number generator to select our Patron of the Month. And then we'll contact you if you've won. And the winner will get their own dedicated episode on Infants on Thrones and a cash prize that I'm going to call reverse tithing. Now, it isn't actually tithing, but it does involve a factor of 10. Because if you win, you will get a cash prize equal to 10 times the amount
the total amount that you donated to Infants on Thrones during that month. So if you're a $1 per episode subscriber and you don't have any limits on how many episodes you support, and we released 7 charged episodes in the month, then that $7 donation will turn into a $70 gift back to you. If your tier level is $2 or $3 or $5 per episode, and again, you haven't put any limits on it, and we release 7 episodes, then you're going to win $140 or $210 or $350. See how it works? So we're going to try this for the final 3 months of 2017, and we'll reevaluate from there. So if you've ever thought to yourself, these asshole infants have totally sold out, begging for money without really giving us anything back, or why would I donate anything to Patreon when I can just keep listening for free? What's in it for me? Or what this wonderfully charming person recently wrote in an iTunes review, Jump the Shark, 2 stars out of 5 by Muzzle Monkey. Infants' early episodes, especially its SmackDowns, are incredible. As its members have changed over time, it has lost its footing. Advertising for Patronus, that's like a spell on Harry Potter, actually. Has become very tiresome. The Infants could take a lesson from Dan Savage about how to gracefully run free and paid services concurrently. Well, you're probably right on that. We could learn a lot from a lot of different people. But anyway, if you've ever thought any of those things, now think this. You can win 10 times of what you donate to us. That's a pretty good deal. So come join us on Patreon if you're not there already, and look forward to our Patron of the Month coming up starting October 31st. We'll be announcing it for the last 3 months of 2017. And what a great way to win some extra money to help offset those holiday gift expenses. So come support us on Patreon. And as always,
thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.
And keep an eye out for part 2 of this conversation coming soon.